Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler here in Austin, Texas, and on the line with me from Bristol, England is Tony Gosling. By gosh, he's been reporting on this gas attack and really uncovering a very, very serious situation. Tony, welcome to our program.
Hi, George. It's been fascinating to see this Salisbury nerve agent story changing almost daily, the official version of what was supposed to have happened. We first were being told that the nerve agent was on a car door handle, then it was possibly in the car, then it wasn't a gas at all, it was a nerve agent. I was joking with a friend of mine, saying, oh well, you know, he was saying, well, what is it if it's not a gas? I said, well, it's like, maybe it's like jam, you know, and he burst out laughing.
Right.
What you call jelly over there, you know.
Right.
Turns out, now they're saying it is a kind of gel. So the story about what was actually behind this contamination has kept changing. We've also seen this woman, Yulia Skripal, who was supposed to be in a coma, apparently accessing her Facebook account whilst in a coma. Now, that may be that she wasn't in a coma. It might be that someone had hacked her password to that Facebook account. It's the not Facebook itself, but the Russian version of it.
Right.
So we've seen all sorts of peculiar holes appearing in this story. And what's most amazing is that the London journalists are still trying to pretend that it stands up. I mean, it's really the most incredible conspiracy theory, fake news story I've ever seen in my entire life, with every single aspect of it is falling apart. Most importantly, of course, it's the amazing Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson this week and his assertion that it was absolutely categorical that the UK defence scientists at Porton Down, just outside Salisbury, had assured him beyond any doubt that the nerve agent originated, this specific material was from Russia. And of course they came out this week saying the opposite, really, saying that they actually couldn't say in any way whereabouts this was from. So this is the Russian permanent representative to the UN Security Council summed it up best on Thursday evening when he said, couldn't you come up with a better fake story?
Yeah, it was poorly carried out, wasn't it? There's too many holes in it to start with. Putin at one time said if it was a nerve gas like worse than VX, it would have killed them quickly, within minutes.
Yeah, this is the incredible thing. I mean, you know, anyone that knows anything about these nerve agents knows that you do not survive from generally. You know, if you've got some sort of protected suit or whatever, then you may survive an attack by these things. But yet we've got three survivors, at least two of which have made a full recovery. This is not normal with nerve agents. So you do wonder if either of them have actually been exposed at all and how much of the story is just completely fake. I have to give a sort of special interest in this story, George, confess, really, because I worked for over a year in Salisbury for the BBC as a reporter, so I do know the area very well, certainly having spoken to friends in Wiltshire and in that area. There's this kind of drama being played out on the world's television, you know, is Salisbury safe, you know, after this terrible attack, all the people on the streets apparently nervous, that kind of thing. Well, that's just total nonsense. The town basically never did do anything but just behave like normal, with the twice weekly markets going on. Nobody's really afraid to go there. And I think that's because they understand that this is just a very isolated attack, even if it is, you know, exactly as we're being told it is. I mean, the other thing is, anyone that knows about this stuff, right, say, for example, the scientists at Porton Down, organic chemists around the world, understand fully what's going on here. We were told by Gary Aikenhead, who's the former PR guy for Motorola, who's now in charge of Porton Down, the Chemical Weapons, British Army Chemical Weapons Centre, Oh, and by the way, aren't we supposed to have gotten rid of these places? I thought we have. We're supposed to, but they've still got one, apparently. Gary Aikenhead was saying, well, he said various things. He said, first of all, that they couldn't trace it to Russia. He then said that there was no antidote. And then he said something very interesting. He said there's probably only state actors that could have created this. Well, that word probably is an interesting word to add in there. It's a bit like the official report into the death of Litvinenko, where they said it's probably carried out on Putin's orders. What the word probably means is that you can just disregard, in fact, turn on its head, whatever I'm about to say after that. Because the fact of the matter is, Aikenhead has got it completely wrong. Organic chemists around the world have been holding up their hands this week and saying, actually, I can make this stuff in my lab, you know, tomorrow if you want. So there are two categories of places where Novichok can be fairly easily synthesized. The formula for making it is publicly available, and it can be made in any reasonably advanced factory which manufactures pesticides. So there are literally scores of these all over the world. Okay, so any of those can make this stuff without really even hardly trying. The other places that can make it, and probably more of them, are organic chemistry labs all over the world. So there are literally hundreds of places where if someone wanted to, they could make this stuff. Now, they probably wouldn't want to because it is so dangerous. But what we're getting is just a tissue of lies. And the only way this story is standing up, George, is because the mainstream press right across Europe, well, almost all across Europe, and in the United States and in Britain, are actually playing along with the lie, almost turning away their heads deliberately from the facts because it rather makes them look silly and they're too embarrassed to report the truth.
Yeah, they want a new Cold War, and they want Putin and Trump divided. That's what I see.
Yeah, definitely. That's definitely the case. I think it's also fascinating the way that Victoria Skripal... it's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, this phone call between Yulia and her cousin Victoria in Russia, which it looks like Victoria recorded and then has either sold it or given it to the Russian media, because Yulia sounds, first of all, very well. She doesn't sound like she's just come out of some sort of the most traumatic coma or whatever. She sounds quite perky. But then she's also saying, oh, well, you won't get a visa. Yeah, so she's obviously in the know. So she's been chatting to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office and MI6, who have probably told her that they won't. I mean, what's she doing chatting with these people? Whose side is she on? Is she an independent actor? Is she looking after her dad? You know, what is going on here? And I just think that was the most fascinating conversation, that one of the closest relatives would be just told, well, you can't... I mean, most Russians... I mean, your average Russian, pick them off the street, George, applies to Britain for a visa, a tourist visa, no problem, they can come here. But we're told that someone whose close relative has been very close to death and, you know, is in this terrible situation in Salisbury District Hospital, that the relative cannot come to visit them. So what they're doing is the British MI6 and the Foreign Office are deliberately excluding these people. Now, they're trying to say that Victoria is another spy, another minion of Vladimir Putin. It doesn't make any sense at all, other than that this is an attempt to isolate Yulia and Sergei so that they can just manipulate the story even further. Because the truth, I mean, this is one of the things they'll have to do, obviously, is to keep these people well away from the media. And obviously the easiest way to do that, even though we now know that Yulia is fine, she's quite perky, she's running about, whatever, and sounding good and ready to go on the TV, they're going to have to keep them well away from the media because they can't control them.
Right, exactly. That's what they did from the very beginning. They made them both incommunicado by varying degrees.
But you're right to bring up the whole thing of the war. I mean, we've heard also today the imposition of billions of, potentially anyway, billions of pounds worth of sanctions on Russia, I'm sorry, on China, and between China and the US.
Right.
And the stock markets have been reacting very badly to this. You know, so I wonder which it's going to be first, George, whether it's going to be open war between the Chinese and Russians and NATO, or the other way around. And let's look at the countries that expelled Russian diplomats, NATO countries.
Right.
I mean, what they try to portray here is, oh, we've got a massive solidarity around the world with us here in Britain, that all these other countries agree with us. No. Your NATO allies agree with you and nobody else does. So that indicates that this is a military operation, that that's actually what this is really about. And of course, it's been a big psychological warfare operation. On the program we do on thisweek.org.uk, you know, we do this program on the airwaves in Bristol every week.
Right,
Martin Summers pointed out last night. He pointed out that Strategic Communication Labs, the parent company of Cambridge Analytica, and we're hearing all this stuff about Trump, we're hearing all this stuff about Brexit. What we're not hearing about is Hillary, and what we're not hearing about is the Remain campaign. Of course, they all employ these strategic communications people, but SCL, the Dicey Arms Fair, one of the biggest arms fairs in the world, in Docklands in London a few years ago, were actually pitching, we can create a terrorist attack wherever you want it, and we'll make it look real, so you can then implement whatever foreign policy objectives you want. Martin pointed this out on the programme. So what we've got now is it's like public relations, Edward Bernays and all that, has just got to such an extreme that they are prepared to be paid and pay millions of pounds, millions of dollars, to create fake terrorist attacks in order to induce the media to report them and the politicians to react to them in order to get the wars they want. And I would suggest we could be looking at another 9/11 style attack on the West somewhere, maybe Israel, United States or Britain, which is either a chemical attack or possibly even a nuclear attack, which then is blamed on Russia or China, which is used to spark off a third world war. And the question for me is really only, are we going to see a crash first, or I would imagine what will happen is there'll be some kind of trigger, a war start, and then we'll see almighty economic crash, which has actually been coming for years. It's just that all it takes is something like this to trigger it. And of course, the financial oligarchy are all sitting there, they've been hedging their bets for this, so they will make an absolute fortune on this crash. Billions and billions of pounds, billions of dollars, billions of Swiss francs, billions of euros will flow from the poor, from the poor's bank accounts, etc., and their various savings, if they've got any, into the hands of all the rich and the wealthy even more. So this war, I'm afraid, because of the fact that everything's been so deregulated, is actually going to be really good for the tiny elite 1%. They're going to make an absolute fortune, literally, on day one that this war starts. So there's no analysis of this, really, in the Western press, George. I don't know if you've seen anybody saying that this is a bit of a danger, because a lot of people stand to make a lot of money at it.
Yeah. The Koch brothers are one thing I spotted today, the last few days. They're against Trump and his tariffs against China. See?
Yeah.
The traders that I've always... What I've always seen is that because Great Britain was the founding of the Industrial Revolution, they always wanted open markets worldwide. So the top elites are always for open trade, no tariffs of any country, anywhere. So that's what they want. Then they can take the labor to the country, the cheapest labor of their industries, wherever they want. And then,
well, this is building a world government, isn't it? That's
right.
The globalist aim, really. The idea is we're going to just allow borders and sovereignty to slowly dissolve, and we'll
That's what's happening in our southern border now. See, and California is just like open borders. What they believe in, their state government out there, and so this is what we have going on in this country right now. The wall that Trump wants to build is more symbolic, in my opinion, than will actually ever fully get built. See what I mean?
I think also, you know, it's amazing the media coverage. Really, for me, as someone that worked inside mainstream press for a few years,
right.
And see, you know, and actually radio really was the first, we got the first bite of the cherry really, George, of everybody. You know, we would get people on speaking about it literally within a few minutes of a news story breaking.
Sure.
Speaking live to the whole of London or wherever. And you can see, looking at this Skripal story, how incredible the lies told by the Foreign Secretary are blatant and obvious, really clear, and in public. I mean, this guy is lying very obviously in front of everybody, and yet there is very little call from him to resign allowed through onto the mainstream press. So the idea, the suggestion that someone might resign to that something like this, which is, it should be obvious.
Do you think they're behind the actual the movement of the press and the media to much more of a free and multiple alternative press? You think they haven't caught on yet? They think these lies are still effective?
The media is probably the most important tool of the oligarchy. They need to control it and own it in order to steer the minds of the population. We should really say bend the minds of the population. Martin Bormann, who was Hitler's Reichsleiter, who was actually the head of the Nazi Party, and he was in charge of all who was going to get promoted and all that sort of thing. He was also in charge of the money. He said, that one of the quotes from him is, every educated person is a future enemy.
Yes, yes.
So we're dealing with this Nazi mindset now. And I really applaud the Russians for talking about the Gestapo. This is what they were saying at the UN, saying this is a Goebbels-style tactic. And that's absolutely right. This is mind-bending propaganda. History will not be kind to Britain, or to the United States, or particularly to our press, for just completely distorting these facts, George.
Right. You know, what has happened in this country is those... remember Radio Free Europe and all that, you know? Well, what has happened to all that is that we've had several laws on the books in this country that prohibited those mechanisms from broadcasting propaganda to this country. And those things are coming apart now. And they're being trashed and overrun by this new... more open, propaganda machine being directed towards the American public now. That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's not just the U.S., it's many places, George.
Yes, right, worldwide, yeah.
I mean, what happens is, effectively, you get BBC journalists, such as there's a guy called Jonathan Marcus. He just literally repeats the lies which are being cooked up in the Foreign Office, so... I mean, these lies may last for a few hours, you know, and some people might be bamboozled. The stupid people will be bamboozled by them. But not everybody, you know, all the intelligent people won't be bamboozled by this. I mean, one other thing to say, of course, is the role of the Council on Foreign Relations and Chatham House, the Royal Institute for International Affairs here.
Right.
So these think tanks are really behind, very, very close behind these sorts of attacks. This time the entire narrative from the government point of view, from the officialdom, from the military point of view, to do with Salisbury, that was laid out literally in the first couple of days by Chatham House. And somebody on Twitter actually pointed out to me that the Sir Simon MacDonald, who's the permanent Undersecretary to the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, one of the top, if not the top, civil servants in the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, so, you know, number one, is married to the daughter of a former chairman of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. I mean, what we're talking about here is the permanent government. The government you can't get rid of, you can't elect, etc. And these sorts of connections between Chatham House and the civil service are so pernicious, I cannot explain how pernicious they are. What it means is that you've got a club, effectively that's what Chatham House is, and your equivalent over in the US is the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right, right.
This club is financed and steered by private business interests to decide on what the national foreign policy is going to be, and it overwhelms any kind of arguments put forward by the Foreign and Commonwealth Office here in Britain or the State Department in the US. And they have an amazing kind of spy machine, PR machine, and they have a tremendous amount of money to push their version of what they think national foreign policy should be. And they have been a major part of this Skripal story, no doubt about it. And it was fascinating for me to see, you know, Sir Simon MacDonald, permanent undersecretary at the Foreign and Commonwealth Office, married to the daughter of the former Chatham House chairman. Because this just shows how close these links are and how little democracy is left, you know, in here in Britain and in the US. Also, I mean, I also quote, if I can, what I would consider to be one of the most amazing sentences uttered to do with the Skripal story, and that is by the Russian ambassador to the UK, who said right at the very beginning of this, when they saw what was happening, I guess this was written by the Russian foreign ministry in Moscow, and he says the blowback will be a separation of the thinking people from the mindless idiots in society. Right. An increased social distrust and hostility towards the politicians and the media and government institutions, fomenting instability and the destruction of personal civil liberty through manufactured national hysteria.
Okay.
Essentially, he says they've cried wolf far too many times to be given any respect whatever by all educated and intelligent citizens. So right. The effect of all of this has been, what has it been? It's been to put the idiots in charge, and everyone is with half a brain, is intelligent and intellectual, and they are supposed to be subordinate now to the morons. Now, what does that do? It really just destroys any kind of social respect, as he says there, fomenting instability, right? So that's what they're doing, fomenting instability within Britain and also within all the government structures. Now, who that benefits are the financial institutions and big business. And of course, this is just part of what I was saying before, which is dissolving national borders and dissolving sovereignty. So
it's
money and big business that's going to be the winner here, George.
Right. What I was saying earlier, this mechanism, the Broadcasting Board of Governors oversees all of the U.S. federal government's international broadcasting services. So it's comparable to the BBC, because they're international, see? You know, BBC, is they have that World Broadcast Network and all those other radio and everything else. So those two things together are big propaganda fronts, see? And I'm sure they were, on the Skripal thing, they were right in line with the British view, right?
Well, also, there was a program that went out just a few weeks or week or so here in Britain before the Novichok incident in Salisbury, which was scripted by a guy called Jack Lothian, and aired on one of the major US networks. It was a co-production with Sky Television. And Jack Lothian, I actually found him on Twitter, and asked him a question. I said, where did you source this Novichok idea? Because Novichok appears in two or three episodes of this spy drama, right? So
yeah.
The idea is this appeared for the first time ever in drama on TV just a few weeks before this incident.
My God.
I asked Jack, I said, where did you source this Novichok idea for the show you wrote, Jack? I'm curious. And I said also, is there any particular reason why, as writers, we should be worried about Russia? Because this whole series is about, you know, Russia is the enemy, Russia is dangerous.
Sure, sure.
Since NATO has spent 30 years since Perestroika surrounding Russia. So I didn't get any reply from him, and I'm not surprised. Even though the guy is quite a prolific writer, he doesn't seem to be able to respond to a simple question like, where did you get this idea for putting Novichok in your film? I would suggest that what we're dealing with there is, and I'm just trying to think of the name of his series, but anyhow, it's predictive programming, they call it. The idea is that the seeds are planted in people's minds, and as a result, when you see something on the television, the series is called Strike Back. That's the series name. I mean, I haven't watched a single episode of it, but someone pointed it out to me pretty much straight away. I said, look at this, look, Nobby Chop has appeared for the first time in any kind of drama series just a few weeks before this attack. So the idea is to seed this idea in people's minds, so when they see the word Nobby Chop, they know what's being talked about. And of course, this has also got parallels with the Litvinenko case, in that Nobby Chop is a Russian word, supposedly,
right.
Just as polonium was at the time considered to have been only manufactured in Russia. When the Litvinenko case, everyone was saying, if it's polonium, it must be from Russia. Well, that's just not true. I mean, there are other countries that could easily have manufactured it too, including the Israelis, who probably did, and it looks like they used it to poison Yasser Arafat too, after his body had been interred. They discovered polonium. It looked at like polonium had been put into his toothpaste, so he was actually brushing his teeth with polonium, poor guy. So, you know, there is a very similar idea, I think, using Novichok and polonium in those two different cases, is to try and, you know, the idea is to fit Russia up for this. But the Russians, of course, are not buying any of it, and most of the rest of the world aren't, apart from the imbeciles in the NATO countries in the media.
Right, you know, this predictive programming, Alan Watt first brought that to my attention years ago out of Canada. I don't know if you know him, but he has a really deep understanding of many of these issues that you've been talking about and met myself over the years, you know. But it's a mind wash system in a field system, electromagnetic field. There's air out there. And what is cast about, you know, through broadcast, radio, and television, and all these other things in the internet now, are highly, you could say, very effective ideas that control us. I think H.G. Wells called it a prison of ideas, maybe, or something like that. See what I mean? So we become prisoners to ideas that control us. See, and that they know this. I mean, the real top people. And it's like mind sorcery, see? That's what they practice.
Well, look, okay, but Murdoch, I think it's very important to see Murdoch with his Fox and Sky.
Yeah.
It is very, very close to this. So it was really fascinating. I mean, nobody's really commented on this, I think.
Yeah.
But when they went into Porton Down, which is a government agency and a military agency, to interview the boss about all this, it wasn't the BBC they sent in, it was Sky Television. Which I just find unbelievable. Why would you send a private broadcaster in? Why wouldn't you send the state broadcaster in to do that? You know, if you're going to, if it's the state organising, I would suggest here that it's because there was a certain amount of manipulation went on with the interview. For example, they may have wished to have questions beforehand. I know most professional BBC reporters would not accept that. Yeah, so it might well be. I mean, I'm just speculating as to why Sky would do that and not the BBC. Well, Sky would be almost certain to say, well, this is a great exclusive, we'll do anything, we'll bend over backwards, give us the questions, we'll give you the questions beforehand. And also there was Craig Murray, the former ambassador to Uzbekistan, pointed out that in the interview that Gary Aitkenhead gave to Sky, right towards the end, there was a complete sort of change where he was talking about state actors being involved, not organic chemists, although they say they can make it, or pesticide factories, who they say they can make Novichok too. So what Craig pointed out was that, oh, they've changed the position of the camera and changed the tripod position. It looks as if they've had a chat with the government handlers who said, oh, we didn't really like this answer, so let's have another answer. So you can watch that that Sky interview, and you'll see right towards the end, suddenly the shot changes, and they fade into a different shot from a different camera, or the same camera, but from a different angle. Now, that's the sort of thing the BBC, as more professional and public service-style broadcasters, although, of course, they've got a lot of criticism of them, they wouldn't allow that sort of thing. They wouldn't allow the PR people behind the scenes to manage the interview in that way, but Sky would. And Sky have been absolutely at the centre of this attempt to push for war. So they've also involved, obviously, in this drama production. I would say let's have the police go and arrest a bunch of people of Sky and see if they had any kind of foreknowledge of this incident, because it looks to me as if they did.
Well, you know, that's a good point, Tony. The are you familiar with Kinetic Corporation? Spelled with a K.
Yes, that's right. Yes, I am. I know them very well. Yeah.
No, they were a spinoff, and what they did was they privatized much of what Porton Down was about and left a skeleton there, they say. So the Kinetic went in there and then privatized into their own hands much of what... I don't know all the details about what they did. I read about this years ago, but Kinetic was a private corporation, and now it's, it was part of the Carlyle Group originally with the real insiders of the UK, right?
Well, this is the shows the idiocy of privatizing your military. Now, it used to be, I can't remember, DERA, I think it was called, DERA, Defence Evaluation Research Establishment, and they controlled all of this stuff. Loads of these like test facilities,
right.
Above ground, etc. And it was, I think, in the 1990s, maybe early 2000s, no, 90s, I'm pretty sure, that half or so of that was privatised, and the privatised half went to Kinetic. The rest of it is supposedly still government agencies. But this privatisation, look, everywhere in the world you go where there's privatisation, disaster follows fast or hard on the heels. Yeah? Because when you start privatising these essential state activities, what happens is you get corruption. You get slackness. You also get advantage being taken of these state institutions. And you get the use most clearly. I mean, you get revolving doors as well with people going out from other private industry into these new government type industries. But the main problem is that you simply do not, because of commercial confidentiality, you get no scrutiny of any of the contracts, George. That's what happens, is they fix the contract up beforehand. Like we've had here this thing called HS2, which is a supposedly high speed train. Which my friend Manfred Petrich, who does the All Smoke and Mirrors blog from Abkhazia, although he's Swiss German, I think, he was saying you can build a railway around the world for the money you're spending on this high speed train HS2 project. Of course, none of it's going to be, I think, going to be built, because the contract that they've signed is for so much money that they will never be able to pay it. So these contract fraud, this is how you do it. Is you privatise your state agencies of various sorts, and then everything becomes shrouded by this cloud of commercial confidentiality, and the basically it's a bunch of vultures appear on the scene, and they're just gobbling the public money with no checks and balances whatsoever.
Well, you know, both the Bilderberg Group have talked about those policies of public-private partnership, but also Davos is a big, they're right there with them in line on that.
Absolutely right. And of course, the one person on the planet who has really slowed and stopped and rolled back to a certain extent this privatisation is Vladimir Putin. That's why he's so hated. Nothing to do with Novichok, nothing to do with Litvinenko, nothing to do with Syria or Ukraine or anywhere else. It's just because he will not sell his country down the river. And the Russians know that, which is why they vote for him. And I think that's really what we're dealing with here, is as simple as jealousy. Right. The oligarchy in the West is jealous of the Russians because they can see that there's a strong leader who's not prepared to just be threatened, blackmailed by Western bullies. And actually, as we've seen from the State of the Union, or whatever they call it, address that Putin gave a couple of months ago, If there is any attempt by the West to try and force take Russia or to force them into taking territory, etc., which it looks like they might well be in Syria very soon, then the West is going to the Western navies will sink to the bottom of the Mediterranean very fast. There will be strikes on, for example, US bases here in Britain, in Norfolk and elsewhere, Fylingdales, places like that. Croughton, and there will be a military exchange of some sort. And I just think that most people don't realise how close we potentially are to that. And let's just hope to God that it doesn't happen.
Right. What's interesting right now is you've got Russia and Turkey and Iran just meeting recently and coming together over Syria.
Well, look, Turkey is after the coup attempt a couple of years ago.
Right.
The Turks have decided they know which side their bread is buttered. They are going to stick with the Russian side, even though, of course, they're still in NATO, which is the most amazing enigma. Honestly,
isn't it a contrasting?
It should be a stand-up comedy routine, really.
Right.
Because how can you have the Russian allies in the middle of the NATO meetings? I mean, you know. So that's been literally incredible. I mean, also, of course, the Turks have decided they're going to move into northern Syria. This is, I think, just a bit of opportunism, and also they're sort of almost covering their tracks, because, of course, that whole area was being used by Turkey to infiltrate ISIS people and al-Nusra people into the country, and supplies going backwards and forwards between the rebels and the Turks and the other NATO countries for quite a while. But I think in a weird way, the inscrutable ones are the Chinese. What are they going to do? But effectively, I think they're absolutely 100% behind the Russians. There's this amazing attempt, isn't there, at the UN, that the British have now decided that they think that they can get Russia taken off of the United Nations Security Council. I mean, this is the behaviour of desperate despots, people who have lost touch with reality, who've surrounded themselves with toadies that just tell them what they want to hear, that are not able to do any kind of critical thinking. And the danger is, of course, that they'll lash out as they go sinking under the sea, as their ship of state starts to sink, that they'll actually start getting very aggressive and angry. Anyway, let's also hope that they don't do that, George. Anyway, sorry, I'm going to have to get going now.
Okay.
I've just got like a couple of minutes, so if you want to ask me anything else, feel free.
Well, just give us your website. I'll put it up on the site and everything now, so they'll be able to reach you on your radio program and your other sites.
I did do an interview right at the start about this Novichok business, which has done quite well on YouTube, which is 20 Reasons Why the Skripal Story is Fake News by former BBC Salisbury reporter Tony Gosling. That's me.
Right, right.
And also the website, which you can have a listen to our show every Friday evening live if you want, or you can listen afterwards on the podcast. That is thisweek.org.uk. Also, of course, we run I run this thing called the 9/11 Forum, because I'm part of, well, this is a UK 9/11 Truth organisation, which has been going for, gosh, since about 2003, I think we originally started it. And that's at 911forum.org.uk, and there's really an absolute wealth of information on pretty much every country, the backstory of what's going on in that country now, and also a whole load of information on various sorts of assassinations. One thing I'll finally say, on our programme on Friday, we had a good look at this Rise Up and Kill First. It's Ronan Bergman's book about the Israeli assassination programmes, and one of the most shocking things in that book is that the Mossad actually decided that they were going to pose as an ABC television crew, and they invited some guy from Hezbollah to be interviewed, and actually it weren't an ABC television crew at all, and killed him. And,
oh my gosh.
See, what this does, of course, is it means that every television crew, ABC, CBS, BBC, Sky, Fox, all become terrorist targets. I mean, this sort of behaviour really does. I mean, I honestly think that the Israelis are asking to have their statehood taken from them, because they're quite clearly not. They're not behaving themselves at all. They've torn up the rule book. So anybody that says, oh, you can't say that the Israeli state shouldn't exist, I think that certainly, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say that myself, but I can see there are very strong arguments to say that they should be completely kicked out of the international community, become a pariah state, and possibly occupied by UN troops until they start behaving themselves. One of the things that Ronan says in this book explains is that several prime ministers of Israel have been just previous to becoming prime minister, have been the Mossad or Shin Bet chief who has come to the prime minister saying, can we assassinate this person, can we assassinate that person? So they're doing that one minute, and it almost seems as if once you've killed a few so-called enemies of Israel, then you become blooded, you know, in the old-fashioned way, like, you know, with people on the fox hunts and things like that. You become blooded, and once you've done a load of killing for the state, then, you know, you're promoted to become prime minister. So, a fascinating insight, that book, Rise and Kill First, it's called.
Right. You know, here recently, Homeland Security is going to put a database together of all broadcasters in this country. they're going to put down our connections, our influences, our programs, our writings, our articles, and all that in the big database.
I imagine they're doing that already, George. I imagine
they're just going public with it now. I'll send them my articles free.
The Snowden revelations showed that there is an immense amount of effort goes in by the NSA, by the CIA, by GCHQ, etc., to influence journalists and to feed fake news to journalists. This is going on the whole time.
Well, mockingbird, right? Yeah.
Call it the information war, and they think that actually the idea of any kind of free press is out the window because they just want to dominate everything that's being said. They want to bend the minds of millions, bend the minds of the masses, just like Joseph Goebbels did.
Exactly. Well, that was a good thing to end on, Tony. Thank you for being with us tonight. We certainly appreciate it. Okay?
Okay, George. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Cheers.